As we listen to the words from the Old Testament this morning from the prophet Jeremiah, we are immediately struck that these are words of warning and rebuke, words of indictment and punishment, together with words of hope and promise. Many among us, from time to time, feel that given the circumstances of our lives within our family, community, or nation, that things will always be the way they are. And two possible things can happen with that view. Depending on where we are in life, we can fall into a state of despair that this is always going to be the way things are. Or, if we like the way things are, we can fall into a state of arrogance that this will always be the way things are. And we know, we've heard it before, nothing ever changes. And for those of us who might have one of those perspectives, regardless which end of the spectrum, it is because we look only on the immediate present. We look only on that which is immediately in front of us and somehow failed to have a vision of the future. But this text reminds us that these extremes will not last. For in the face of divine indictment and punishment and hope and grace, the extremes will not last. So let me place this Jeremiah text in some kind of context. The text is focused on those who have been placed in positions of power. And you heard the word, and we sang the hymn that focused, and we read the psalm that focused on the shepherd. But let us not be carried away thinking that this is a shepherd going after sheep with a crook in his or her hand. It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with one who has been placed in a position of power, including ministers and pastors and priests, including those in the political realm and those in the religious realm as well. It is directed, to be sure, to all of us, but in particular to those who have power. These are ancient words for modern times. Not only for a time that has gone by. We don't get to say, well, that was in Jeremiah's time, 2,800 years ago. It is for our time. In Jeremiah's time, he faced all kinds of conflicts. He even challenged God. He even said to God, "Why are you making a mockery out of my life?" He faced false prophets. There was one false prophet in the time of Jeremiah who kept telling the people, "There is nothing to worry about. There is peace. Trust me. There is peace. There is peace. There is peace." Now you might be thinking I'm emphasizing this for effect. He actually said it three times. "There is peace. Don't worry about it. All is well." Except all was not well. And it didn't matter how many times he proclaimed peace that all would be well. If it was not true, repeating it did not make it true. And it didn't matter how many people believed what he was saying. That too did not make it true. And this is what Jeremiah faced. And some of these people who believe this would join others, and they will end up into a foreign land we know as the Babylonian exile. There were false prophets then, and I dare say there are many who surround us today. And sometimes we hear, depending on the rhetoric in our society, that there is a special place in hell for such and such a person. Maybe based on their ideology and their hypocrisy and so on. And maybe there are really dangerous issues involved with hypocrisy and with ideology and hate speech and violence and have to be attended to. But I will tell you, I have no idea what a special place in hell means. I just don't know. I don't know the structure of hell. I know about Dante's hell. I know about the fourth circle. I know where the demons dwell. But I don't know. And I really don't know much about how the rooms in heaven are located. I don't know if there's a basement. I just don't know. I don't know if there's a penthouse. I don't know if there are windows. I don't know if it's open. I just don't know. And Jesus thankfully addressed this when two of his disciples said, Lord, when we are in heaven, can I sit in your right hand or can I sit in your left hand? And Jesus says, Focus. You're in the here and now. Don't worry about the left hand and the right hand. Focus. But here is what I do know, with a relative degree of certainty. If we cause others to suffer, if we cause injustices in our society to go unchallenged when we have a voice to do otherwise, if we destroy others with our words and with our actions, if we hate and perpetuate violence, if we marginalize others on the basis of race and ethnicity and station in life and status in society and gender, things that we have created, constructions, if we scatter the innocent, if we create artificial barriers, if we cause the truth every day to become a daily casualty, if we sow seeds of discord and seasons of discontent, then I know the words of Jeremiah will come to us with all of its full force. This is what will bring divine rebuke. This is when the words of Jeremiah will become our words. We only have to look at the very first word in that text. And perhaps everyone in this congregation, because we are an attentive lot, know what that word is. But in the event that we missed it, it is woe. That's how the text begins. And in the Hebrew Bible, without exception, when that word is used, it always has to do with indictment and punishment. The prophet does not come and begin by saying, woe there. Nice job. The prophet does not come and begin with a woe and a hand around your shoulder and says, keep it up. When that word is used, we know that whatever comes after it will be a divine rebuke. And so it is here. The people have been told, the leaders have been told, do not scatter my people. I will bring them home someday, according to the text. They will come home. And the prophet Jeremiah and the book of Jeremiah is filled, as it is with the prophet Isaiah, with homecoming motifs. But homecoming only works if you have been gone away from home, either by choice or you have been scattered. I will bring you home again. But it's the in-between. It's the in-between now and then that causes us such pain and angst and heartbreak and suffering. You will come home again. But because we are who we are as human beings, our hearts are broken between now and then. And the prophet is speaking to that moment. When leaders scatter the vulnerable, this is a word. Not my word. This is the sacred word that we hold as scripture. And it doesn't have to be a physical scattering. We scatter people all day long by what we say and do that undermines and unravels faith. It's a scattering. People are scattered because their faith and their hope and their belonging might be challenged and destroyed. It happened in ancient times, and you and I know it happens today. This text, along with so many other biblical texts, we read, we hear, and the text and the stories refuse to let us go. But it's not the last word. And that for us is always something of grace. Despite our best efforts, it's never the last word. Everything that we do, even to the utmost, is penultimate. There will come a time when fear will be dispelled, we are told, and no longer will be dismay among families and communities. But that might be then, and the prophet is speaking about now. Those who have squandered the stewardship of leadership, those who have squandered the stewardship of being a shepherd of the people of God, this text calls them evil. It's not my word. For what you have done to my people, the text says, is evil in the sight of God. It's serious indicting language. And then there is more. It's part of who we are as a community that sometimes the innocent face the punishment along with the guilty. When you go into exile, you don't get to choose who are the ones that were responsible. We all go together. Howsoever it affects one of us, it affects all of us. That's what the prophet says. And so when the people will end up in Babylonian exile and the temple will be destroyed and the land will be razed to the ground and the homes will be destroyed and the families will be scattered, the innocent along with the guilty. So this is no time to say, I'm not the one to use my voice. It is. We are a community. It's a time to raise questions. Last week, the Reverend Pat Robertson of television fame said that we should not raise questions about God's chosen one. We should not raise questions and challenge the government. You don't have to believe me. I'm doing the research for you. Or you can go and check yourself. But he is also the one who, after September 11th, 2 days later, said that God had withdrawn the curtain of protection from America because of you people, and you know who you are. And the man who said, I don't have to listen to Episcopalians or Methodists or any of the Antichrists. Don't question. And the text says, question. And we have the permission all through the Bible to question. Abraham questioned God. Moses questioned God. And Jesus, in the greatest existential question of all time, hanging on the cross, questioned God, why have you forsaken me? We have an invitation to question. And we cannot just use our own message. We cannot just use our own ideology. Jesus takes us to task, as does Jeremiah. Takes us to task. We cannot overlook the message and the ministry and the work and the healing and the teaching and the feeding of Jesus simply because we don't like it. We don't get to choose that. What could be more egregious to say, I know what Jesus said about that whole loving your neighbor thing, but that was then. But what about now? Instead, to use our hearts and our minds, gifts that we have been given, to be thoughtful and caring and consoling and comforting, and to be just and to be righteous and to be kind. But it takes introspection. It takes a moment to back off from the busyness of our lives. It's not an easy thing. And so we hear these words in the gospel this morning. We hear these words. the opening line in the gospel, the apostles gathered around Jesus and told him all that they had done and taught. This is a message for us. The disciples who are seeing Jesus nonetheless still are reporting to him almost as if to say, I want all of you to stay on message. They told him what they were doing and what they were teaching. And then he said, okay, let's go to a quiet place. Let's go and rest. Let's go and reflect. This is not some kind of secret society, some kind of retreat center. They are being shaped for a ministry that they have been entrusted to carry on. And Jesus takes the time for rest and introspection. Stay in message. Don't allow your own message, whatever you might think it is and how important you might believe it is, don't allow that to overcome what I'm leaving you with, Jesus said. And when I read this text, I will tell you, I feel it speaking to me with all the busyness we have in our 24/7 lives. The idea of rest and introspection, it's a luxury, we say. And Jesus says, come away with me. They don't even have time to eat. Think of the Genesis accounts of creation. After every day, we are told that God stops and God says, this is good. I like it. And then goes to day two and does the same thing. Stops every time. Now, I'm confident that God could have created all 6 days in one moment. But after every day, there is almost an evaluation of creation. It is good. And when it's all finished, it is very good, we are told. It's rest and reflection. And we're not called to rest so that we could get ready for work, which I know is how we think about rest. I need to rest up so I'm ready for tomorrow. No. Rest for the sake of introspection and for its own virtue. Rest, Jesus said to them. But then Jesus does something extraordinary just when we think we've got it figured. He's calling his disciples away to rest. And people by the thousands are following him. I don't know how they managed, but they got there ahead of him. And what does Jesus do? And we will see it in the gospel text for next Sunday as well. Jesus is concerned about their physical needs. As important as my rest is, and it is, so this is not an excuse, but it is not as important as your hunger. And we will see it next week as well. When they're all retreating and Jesus says, have they eaten? Do you have any food for them? There is no preaching. There is no good work. There is simply the physical sustenance. Sometimes we take away the things that we think are so important for that which is urgent. And Jesus does that. So leave aside the ideologies and left, right, and center so that they don't shadow the gospel. Rest. Rest and take care of the ones who are the least among us, Jesus said. Take care of the vulnerable among us, Jesus said. That's the message. Speak and act, Jesus said, and the prophet said. This is our time. We might have been, perhaps not you, but I have been neglectful, perhaps, in times gone by. But never let us be neglectful for today or tomorrow. This is our time, both in our words and in our actions. We, as you know, are the ones. We are the inheritors of the gospel of care. We, today, this is our moment. Amen.